Brothers and sisters, we have just heard from a chapter that is full of the scent of death. Religious authorities are plotting against Lazarus in this chapter, and Judas is plotting against Jesus. Meanwhile, Jesus' friend Mary has anointed him with expensive perfume that fills the whole house, and Jesus remarks ominously that the point of her good deed is to keep his death from smelling like death. Jesus' death is in the air, and the evangelist uses one of his hallmark techniques to let us know. All through this gospel, like the beating of a drum, we hear that Jesus' hour had not yet come. His hour had not come. My hour has not come. And now in verse 23, the clock strikes 12. We hear it on Jesus' own lips. The hour has come for the Son of Man, he says. Remarkably, the way he puts it is that the hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. And we wonder how this can be. We aren't used to finding glory in the death of our champions. My former pastor, John Timmer, used to remark on this. Only an evil heart gloried in the assassination of Yitzhak Rabin. Only racist hearts gloried in the death of Martin Luther King. The men and women who loved Jesus would see him die on a torture instrument that the Romans had adapted to terrorize their enemies. These men and women would see the Romans take Jesus' life, and before that they would see them take his dignity in a public spectacle that was meant to intimidate anybody with an eye to see or an ear to hear or a heart to tremble at state-sponsored terrorism. The Romans jammed their crosses into the earth like scarecrows, and every one of them said to the world, "Caesar is Lord. Don't you mess with Caesar." The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified, says Jesus. And we can imagine the puzzled looks on the faces of Philip and Andrew and those innocent Greeks who had come to see Jesus. Maybe they'd come to see Jesus do a sign, a miracle, and instead they find a man who talks in riddles about the great advantage of hating your own life. A man who answers questions they're not asking. And so we don't know exactly what Jesus means all the time. And no doubt they didn't either. And so, like a third grade teacher, Jesus uses a very simple figure. He stops to explain how there might be glory where we find only grief. Unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains only a single grain. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. Jesus was talking about a simple fact of agriculture that everyone in those parts understood. A grain of wheat has to die, so to speak, and fall into the earth. It has to be buried in God's good earth, else you don't get a harvest. You don't get amber waves of grain without some dying and rising. In John 12, death is in the air. The Son of Man will die and fall into the earth in an event that seems so devastating that it looks as if creation is falling back, collapsing back into chaos. But Jesus says that this is the hour in which the Son of Man is to be glorified. In God's mighty agriculture, the death of Jesus will feed whole nations with the bread of life. Jesus' body, sown like a single grain into the earth, will send its roots down and its stalk up until it bursts from the ground with food to feed the nations of the world. Isn't this what the gospel always says? Isn't this what the gospel cries out? The Son of God did not come into the world to condemn the world, but so that the world might be saved through him. How wonderful all this is, and also how very, very disturbing, because the same Lord who speaks of his death goes on to speak of ours. And his very pointed observation is that he is not going to be dying alone. He will be the first fruits of this cycle of dying and rising. But God isn't going to reap the whole harvest without dropping a whole lot of grains into the ground. How pointedly Jesus says that whoever serves me must follow me, and where I am, there will you be also. It seems that Jesus wants to share the glory of the cross. And maybe we think this is a kind of glory on which we'd like to take a pass. Maybe let Jesus take care of the dying part, and we'll show up for the resurrection. Maybe get some of the new life while still hanging on to our old life. Maybe get new humility and feel pretty proud of it. Maybe be filled with gratitude for God's bounty and also restrict the distribution of it. Jesus wants us to go down into death that will cause new life to spring up 20-fold, and we keep clinging to the old life. The trouble is that there's no future there. There's no glory there. There's no miracle of multiplication there. To get bread, you have to thresh some kernels. To get wine, you have to crush some grapes. To get a new life in union with Jesus Christ, the old self has to be threshed and buried. We don't get life without dying first. Not even Jesus got a resurrection without a death. And so across the centuries, healthy Christian persons, healthy Christian institutions have always been dying and rising with Jesus Christ. We did it when he did. We did it again in our baptism, and we do it every single day when our old self dies and our new self rises like Jesus walking out of his tomb. Arrogance dies and humility arises. Envy dies and gratitude arises. Cruelty dies and kindness arises. The age-old motive for murder, revenge, dies, and forgiveness arises. The whole world was in Lancaster County in October of 2006. The whole world was with Amish people who had spent a lifetime dying and rising with Jesus Christ. They were dying out there with their terrible loss, and not just the precious girls who died in the schoolhouse. No. The whole world watched Amish Christians die with Jesus by absorbing evil and not passing it back. These people absorbed evil and then cut the loop of vengeance. The whole world watched them take terrible evil unto themselves and then reach out with their love and sorrow and tears, not only to the devastated families of the dead girls, but also to the family and friends of the killer. I want to say to you, brothers and sisters, that nobody does this without a supernatural miracle. Nobody does this without a Holy Ghost miracle of grace. To suffer cruel violence and then to reach out, not with revenge, but with forgiveness, that's a mark of people who have been dying and rising with Jesus Christ their whole lives, so that when the time came, they were ready. They had done this before. Unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains a single grain. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. The word of the Lord. Thanks be to God.